praise and grace, Lord, to do it in the way that you command. Therefore, we pray, Father, for your presence to be in this room, Father, that you will touch every heart, every person, grace every official, Father, to be effective in what they do. We ask this in the honorable name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen. Amen.
Thank you very much. That's a way of execution. And I think we need to just officially congratulate our board of directors. Yay! And we welcome them and all our Thank you very much. You ready? Any other agenda?
Thank you.
And on the agenda, honorable members, we are happy to have received from NHC and from me too, and then after that, we will consider the amendment. Any of the agenda? Honorable Sobala?
I move to our second session.
Thank you very much. It is by that, probably what we need to do now. I read an article from
report from the
second presentation will be done by the National Education Evaluation and Development Unit, NEDU. NEDU has been created as a result of our engagement with other countries, including the United Kingdom, England, where an outfit called OFSTEC, Office of the Office of Standards, which was created in Britain, was created to look at the quality of education in the UK. And subsequent to that, during the time of Minister Pando, then the establishment of NEDU came into being. NEDU is a unit established in the department. It enjoys its independence in terms of its work, but it also reports to the department because we exercise an oversight over its performance, but it also reports to Parliament. It exists by legislation, and there is in the function and its relationship in terms of the department is encapsulated in terms of the legislation and policy credibility in the state. So the portfolio committee will be receiving a report on the work that we do as well. I will be less involved in the engagement with the portfolio committee with the two presentations as part of demonstrating the extent to which the two are actually doing their work on their own. I would be involved when there's a need to do so, but there are entities that are reporting to the department and created those specific purposes. Chair, if that is fine, I thought it's important to give this explanation. Also that we also have some new members who are part of the committee, and not to assume that that relationship is understood by everybody. So I'm going to request that I hand over to the CEO of the NCT to take you through the presentation, if that is okay with you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I should also start by extending my greetings to the new chair, honorable member, the DG and the colleagues that are sitting here in the room today. Chairperson, secondly, perhaps I should apologize for having slept the loudest when he spoke about the features of chief of the room. I do retract my expression of excitement. So, Chairperson, as the DG has indicated, I thought that it's important to actually approach the presentation to cover two broad aspects. One is the background of the NCT, given that we have new members. Secondly, of course, is the progress on the work of the NCT, and included in that the trajectory that the NCT will be taking going forward. So on the first or on the second slide of the presentation, we start by presenting the mission of the NCT. Which is summarized as mobilizing national capacity to assist governments to achieve distinctive, substantial, and sustainable improvements in education. So the whole concept of mobilizing capacity, I think, is so central to the work of the NCT. The kind of capacity that we talk about, cut across, financial, human resources, technical resources, and, social capital, that is mobilized from society to assist, government to achieve its goal. And then the specific use of the word assist, implies a clear-cut understanding of the fact that the primary responsibility responsibility of providing Catholic education licenses to education. And also the fact that it is necessary to bring on board other sorts of capacity that may, relevant sorts of capacity that lie outside the confines of the Department of Basic Education. And again, Chair, you know, learning from the over 30 years of partnership in education, we have actually sought to emphasize the importance of presenting distinctive and substantial gains or improvements that are sustainable. So in a sense, it will not help us much in terms of not focus on improvements that are not sustainable in the work of the university. Broadly, the whole work of the NCT is aimed at achieving a shared, you know, vision of where children possess the right skills, knowledge, and attitude that enable them to live economically gainful lives, to have economically gainful and fulfilled lives. So, Chair, as you would correctly know, the Southern Education System is the largest school, you know, over 4,000 to 5,000 schools, depending on which category you take into account. And the NCT, when it started, had to consider how best, you know, to pitch into the system. And that large, with various tiers cutting across various tiers of travel. And it had to do that in such a way that whatever the NCT does actually supports the work that is planned to do in government. Towards the achievement of education improvement goals. So that diagram, you know, shown on the board, clearly outlines the space between which the entity works. So you see that level one has to do with learners. And we specifically said that even though we work with the private sector, many of whom focus on like learner level, like supporting individual learners, that level, the entity decided not to focus on less sustainable. Instead of trying to improve the immediate quality of each and every learner that passes through, we rather decided to focus on improving the pipeline through which these learners are actually educated. So that's why a lot of the focus in the NCT is on systems, is on skills, on teachers, and employees of the department that can help improve the quality of learners that are producing. Therefore, the work of the NCT started at level two, obviously with a view of getting to level five, which is the entire education system. So in the first 2 to 3 years, we spent a lot of time designing and testing programs and projects and approaches that were tested in 324 five-star schools located in 8 districts across the country. And those districts were in 4 provinces. After we had effected a set of approaches and projects, we then tested those, got the evidence of their efficacy and effectiveness before we agreed with the respective districts to universalize the work that we're doing in those districts. Therefore, the work of the NCT was universalized initially in 8 districts, covering about 4,302 schools. Even when we got to the level of universalization, we continued to drive a learning agenda, particularly on how this sort of improvement initiative could be brought out in the larger parts of the system. So you will see, Chair, that the next level therefore was provincialization. So those 4 provinces that hosted the test in the district then were encouraged to start provincializing the work of the NCT, where the NCT increasingly started playing the role of supporting those provinces to implement the project and programs as mentioned. The last level is nationalization, and there's a couple of those initiatives that have now been nationalized, meaning that they are implemented across the province. With all the work that we've been doing integratively with the Department of Basic Education at the various levels. An example of a program or project that has gotten to level 5, for instance, is the primary reading improvement program that has now been adopted by EDCOM and ICM as a national program of the Department of Basic Education. I think a very good case study of collaboration between government, private sector, labor, and civil society, and following very tight methodology of designing teams that can help us as a country, testing those, getting evidence on how well they work, and in fact, crafting the best way of, you know, rolling those out in the future. So, Chair, I am going to now turn to giving you some highlights on the reach of the NECT program and the inputs that we've made before I talk about outcomes and plans, you know, going forward. So, in about 5 years, effectively starting from 2014, when we had the system set out to implement various programs across the country, we have, together with the Department of Basic Education, developed more than 144 structured learning programs that cover mathematics, science, languages, and in fact, you know, start from grade 1 and extend up to about grade 11, and less so in the senior phase and so on. So, structured learning programs, Chair, comprise a set of well-researched, well-designed materials that seek to help teachers to deliver the national curriculum. It breaks down the national curriculum into lessons, daily lessons, in the first day of the year to the last day of the year. And the intention of these learning programs is to ensure that the delivery of the curriculum is well-paced, and therefore enables the teachers to complete the curriculum. Secondly, it ensures that the delivery of the curriculum is well pitched. So we teach grade 3 what we're supposed to teach grade 3 and not a level down or 2. Thirdly, it helps teachers to improve the assessment of what they teach and feedback into how they teach. So the benefit of the learning program that we've seen in the past, you know, couple of years has been in the increase of the coverage of the curriculum by the teachers, because it then helps them to improve the utilization of the time that's available in the given year. But secondly, we are seeing an improvement in how teachers actually teach the curriculum, you know, in the classroom. So those materials have been provided to over 92,000, have been provided to over 92,000 teachers across the country by the end of last year. So the provision of these materials actually is accompanied by training, which initially we provided at the beginning of each, you know, quarter. So teachers receive materials for each quarter, and they have to receive training on how to deliver those materials in each of the quarters. So that too changed the professional development approach and it chunked, you know, professional development in line with what teachers can take in a particular time. So in excess of about 71.3% of the schools, largely primary schools, have actually received the training and the materials, and as I've cited, 92,000 teachers have been part of this. But equally important is that 671 subject advisors have been involved in the design, in the delivery of this curriculum, because we strongly believe that if this work is to be sustainable, it actually has to involve subject advisors every step of the way. In order to implement this, although very difficult and costly, we accompanied the rollout of the program with some coaching and support, and in particular, coaching and support was provided to areas that were weak and teachers that needed it most. All in all, that 71.3% involves about 16,600 schools across the country. And we think that has contributed to that, checking up how teaching and learning is done in the country, and secondly, how professional development is done, and thirdly, how the second and the district should continue to support schools in their education. So that talks to the sustainability that I spoke about. We could have decided to directly go through to the teachers and not involve the other, you know, players, and I think that would rock the entire initiative of deep sustainability potential. So, Chair, in the same way, we have approached sustainability by ensuring that we work as every critical level of the system in order to ensure what we call vertical alignment. So in order to ensure that the schools know exactly, the teachers know exactly what's expected to teach, and that's shared with the heads of departments in the schools and the principals and the circuit managers, districts, and the province, as well as the national department. So in that regard, we have together with the department designed a district improvement approach called the fundamentals of performance. The fundamentals of performance essentially take the 10 critical areas, functional areas of the district, and it breaks those down into 10 sub areas, and we help districts to self-assess to see in which ones they are weaker and in which ones they are stronger. And out of that assessment, districts are then assisted to develop improvement plans. We've been at it for a good 3 to 4 years, perfecting the system, and it's one that the districts are very, happy about. It continues to be improved, and I'm very glad to report that about 2 months ago, that paper-based system was being taken by the Western Cape Department of Fisheries to turn it into an electronic system, which we continue to test, and once it's perfected, we're going to put it across the country. But Chair, as per the presentation, you can see that in total, 56% of the districts nationwide have been introduced to the FOP, and about 35 of those have been inducted in the development of the plans that are informed by the profiling. Alongside the FOPs, in every district that we do work, we establish what we call the district steering committees, which are made up of local business people, teacher unions, local leaders like traditional leaders and religious leaders. And the idea is that those must work with the QLCC to support and advocate for education improvement. The QLCC, the DSCs have done phenomenal work in the past couple of years, including engaging with teachers on aspects such as time wastage, engaging with unions on how to support the education development work and so on. And in many cases, dealing with difficult issues amongst the key stakeholders that work at the district level. We think that it is a structure that we have to support, and we now have evidence on how best and what sort of conditions need to be in place for the district steering committees to function. All in all, we now have 19 district steering committees, all of which have been taken through some sort of an induction on education policy, how the education system works, and how to mobilize and support education and so forth. We have observed through the DSC work that many of the people who aspire to support education actually don't understand the policy framework in relation to education support. For instance, who takes the responsibility for what between the national, provincial and district levels and so on. So we take the opportunity to bring the DSC up to scratch in terms of how those the responsibilities of the DSC. Another area that we work in, Chair, is exploring 21st century learning and teaching agenda. We have spent time consulting with leading research organizations in other countries to see what trajectories they are taking in bridging the gap between what the education systems teach today and what we should actually be teaching into the 21st century. So, there's lots of talk about the fourth industrial revolution and so on. And we think that the translation of the fourth industrial revolution agenda in education should actually be around, specifically about, how we teach our kids in the 21st century, how we prepare our kids to deal with a complicated world that's complicating through the fourth industrial revolution. I think it's important for education to define the vantage point through which we engage in the fourth industrial revolution in our agenda. We have considered a number of frameworks, in fact up to 35 curricula and a number of frameworks that are emerging across the world. And we have adopted a framework that is summarized in that picture, on the wall, which has five, you know, elements to you know, the curriculum. The first is knowledge, which is quite well covered in our curriculum. The second is, you know, skills, you know, also well covered in our curriculum. And the third is character, sufficiently covered in our curriculum, but, you know, not adequately practiced in the classroom. And lastly, you know, meta-learning, which emphasizes the preparation of learners to be able to, you know, to kind of be able to lifelong learn, and for them to be able to curate knowledge and information in a context where there's knowledge and information, in fact, there's information overload provided through the fourth industrial revolution. So, Chair, the contribution of the NECT in this regard is actually to take that framework and test it in typical South African schools. As a result, we have chosen 10 primary schools in Waterberg and the 11th one in Soweto, which is part of the UJ teaching school, to test how these competencies can be practically implemented and to identify where the blockages are. And the whole purpose is to learn on behalf of the entire system. So we keep feeding the lessons to the Department of Basic Education and the curriculum, you know, branch in particular. Some interesting lessons are emerging, and part of those are about how actually the 21st century learning and teaching implies integration or requires integration between the classroom, the school level, between the school level and the home, because you can't isolate, you know, the 21st century learning and teaching, or rather relegate it to the classroom. If you take, for instance, teaching kids how to be resilient, you're not going to only teach it from the classroom. You've got to teach it in the classroom, at the school level, at home. You've got to reinforce in the community. And research shows that actually we need to produce kids who have balanced you know, abilities in all those, you know, competence. So we think we're doing well. There's quite a good interest from the private sector to participate in that regard. Largely from a moral obligation for them to contribute towards producing balanced learners that can serve in, you know, in industry. Standard Bank, for instance, has come out to partner with us in that respect, and they're interested in, you know, working with us to bring out the key lessons. The next area I want to highlight our work chair is on, you know, technology and education. There's like three aspects that cover our work, our partnership work with the DBE. The first one is the modernization of the South African School Administration and Management System, SASM, which we've been at, you know, for the past, you know, 2 years or slightly more, starting from working with the DBE to define the user specifications that are necessary to guide the modernization work. So in the past year, as you see from some of our annual, you know, reporting, we've been out to look for a service provider to support the development of the software. Perhaps the one thing to just highlight is that work is supported largely by three philanthropic organizations that have raised about 60% of the budget that's required. We're at the tail end of you know, securing the service provider. We just finished the evaluation of the number of proposals that we have received, and think that negotiations will start, you know, very soon before that a software is updated and piloted in two provinces. The two provinces that have been selected for the pilot are the Free State and Northwest. All sorts of technical considerations have been, you know, made towards the choice of those two provinces. The second area, Chair, is where we work with the DBE to develop an ICT strategy, so building it from the white paper on ICT and running a whole lot of consultations from among the provinces to bring out a comprehensive ICT strategy that will guide the work of the DBE in as far as taking advantage of technology is concerned. The third area is actually in helping the DBE to build a Chief Information Officer in the capacity. So First Rand Foundation has actually they provided a grant to support the CIO position for 3 years so that the DBE can build the necessary capacity for the CIO. So the DG actually is using that provision to build that office, and we've got support for the next 3 years to put somebody in that office to build the necessary system towards capacitating the CIO office. So Chair, we also work in the area of dialogue, and in fact the NDP presupposes a continual engagement between key stakeholder groups in development, the private sector, unions, government, and civil society. So one of our program areas is focused on dialogue. There's a range of dialogues that we have actually organized over the past years. Some of those are highlighted on the board. I'm safe to say that the dialogue that we have organized since the NECT has been established are over 80 in number, and we've engaged directly over 6,000 people who have interest in education, and so directly, and a whole lot more people indirectly in education dialogue. We have seen that dialogue has somewhat reduced perception gaps between the key players in the education space. Chair, let me turn now to some system and school level outcomes. There's a range of system and school level outcomes. I just chose some highlights from the report that we have, and a whole lot of that is on our net. So the first is just to highlight the kind of impact that the programs have had on the subject advisory services and teacher training. Some data drawn from the Eastern Cape is presented there to make the point. The first graph that you see presents the foundation phase mathematics test scores relating to subject advisors, where the pre-test yielded an average performance of 37, and after the post post-test level, there was a 20 percentage point increase on what the subject advisors knew. The same kind of applies in terms of languages, although you see that the baseline on languages is much higher than the baseline on mathematics. The next highlight relates to learner level English scores, and again comparing the Libode and Mount Faith for the period 2017 to 2018, you can see the improvement rate between those two districts in the period of 12 months, where in the border we saw a 7 percentage point, which is actually a good 12 or 13 percent increase. And in Mount Frey, there's a slightly larger margin of percentage point increase. In the same vein, some of the data that we have collected, suggest a clear increase in the number of learners that are performing at that are performing better in both languages and mathematics. And that graph that you see at the moment, you see that in 2017, the learners that were performing at level one in that particular sample was 9%. That proportion was reduced in 2018. And in the same vein, the learners who were performing at level seven in 2017 was much lower, and that was increased to about 2% in 2018. All what that demonstrates is how, the program has shifted the number of learners that perform, increased the number of learners that perform at a higher grade. I do actually also just highlight, share some statistics on the performance of the learners in languages across the various skills areas. That's food for thought, in particular for education researchers and those who design the program. But it does show us which areas are more, difficult and problematic, and it lays the basis for further and more in-depth your analysis on how to improve the various areas. Chair, since 2018, when we received the Perth report, the DG and the Minister approached the NECT and requested an engagement on how the NECT could help support the work of improving reading, and particularly reading with meaning, something that the President referred to earlier in the year. The investigation that the NECT undertook identified the fact that the department has a lot in the area of reading, alongside the many other non-governmental activities in the same space. But there is very weak coordination amongst the players who play in those spaces with good intention. And the suggestion was that the country should look at actually pursuing a coalition that would reduce that would increase coordination and therefore take advantage of economies of scale and increase the focus of South Africans on in key areas, geographically and otherwise to improve reading. So the proposal that was put to the DBE and the players in the space was that we actually need to establish a coalition, a national reading coalition, that would respond better, align better the initiatives, reduce overlaps and gaps, increase the economies of scale and efficiency, improve messaging and adopt proven approaches and increase accountability among the initiatives that are involved in reading. So Chair, from there, we took this proposal to a summit of 400 stakeholders from across the country to test the desirability and the appetite and the potential of the initiative on the 15th of February, which was adopted at that point, and it was agreed that the NECT should forge ahead in working with the various stakeholders to design a plan for the National Reading Coalition. So, Chair, the slide on the board identifies the various areas that the National Reading Coalition focuses on. The first is the improvement in how we actually prepare teachers for university. The second is increasing access to reading materials. The third is support to continuing professional development. Fourth is community activities, and fifth is policy, and seventh is research, monitoring, and evaluation. So the key message there is that we think that reading improvement should actually get addressed in a comprehensive manner, and we should take a macro approach to addressing it. So meaning that the efforts that we put into addressing this challenge must actually move away or extend beyond micro-level initiatives that focus on learners in the classroom and bring it out into teachers, parents, communities, and so on and so forth. The details of those, we can prepare. Strategically, we have suggested that the National Reading Coalition starts in 25% of our about 1,000 seconds. And the whole idea is that we have to have concentrated focus and engagement to ensure that every capacity in every community actually brought to bear to support reading. A steering committee comprising various leaders has been pulled together, and in fact we have profiled what's happening in the 25% of the schools, including who's actually working in those 25% of the circuits, which schools have what materials, and what schools are performing in what areas. And the idea is to provide the necessary material, insight and intelligence for the prospective partners to come on board and to work with the DBE to improve reading in those particular areas. And I think it's working very well. We are now at the tail end of finalizing a national reading improvement plan with the DBE and the key players. Since the past 3 weeks, we've been consulting with key stakeholder groups. We have seen universities, we've seen unions, we've seen researchers, we've seen education funders, and we want all the key players in the reading space to agree on a common reading improvement plan together with government, so that we can, in the next 3 years, first sort out reading in the first 25% of the second, and then after that 3 years, we can then go to the next 25% of the second until we've covered
the entire landscape in the country. So we're looking at the possibility of launching that that plan. I must say that the launch would actually come in the as a backdrop of work that we have started doing. So we have started mobilizing the private sector to put books, you know, into schools. We have started coordinating people who do, you know, reading improvement in some of these sectors. We have actually started working with the DPE to train teachers on how to actually improve their capacity to read, teach, I mean, to teach reading. So when the plan comes, that would actually add on to the work that has started, and it would, you know, seal the coordination that we are pursuing. One feature of the plan is at every point of it, we try and break the glass wall between governmental and non-governmental initiatives. So each of those six areas that I referred to is convened by a non-governmental person with expertise, but that person works with a champion who comes from government, who may either be from DBE or Department of Higher Education, and who will be responsible for the respective, you know, area. And they then establish a task team of about 6 to 10 people who guide, you know, their work, including how we target, how we plan, how we target, how we monitor in each of those areas. And we think all those brought together would actually create a good thinking trust, you know, trust about a national, you know, national trust, thinking trust about how we improve living in the country. Added to that, the presidency himself and GCIS have been very supportive in this initiative. I think both the president and the GCIS recognize the fact that for us to address reading challenges in this country, we have to take a macro approach. We have to take an approach that actually supports, get the community to support what teachers do, you know, in the classroom. In the various ways in which government is supporting that initiative, the president himself is working on launching a reading, a national reading club, which we're helping him to, you know, set up in that respect. We have also started setting up second reading, you know, clubs in every second that we are targeting. Slowly but surely, we're setting up this reading club, and I must say that teachers and principals and second managers are appreciating the challenge for them to start reading. I think reading is something that must permeate all our work, including the portfolio committee and all leaders in all sectors, private sector and so on, to try and encourage the country to read and to reinforce, therefore, what happens in the classroom in respect to reading. DBD has been working with the NECT on the primary school reading improvement program, which I referred to earlier on, which has now reached all the, you know, provinces, and in fact provinces are taking that forward. That's some of the statistics that's coming out from PLSIT 1. I mean, I won't go through the details, but it does show that there are improvements in largely in letter sounding and so on, and less so on more comprehensive reading, you know, indicators, which take time to take root. Shared towards the conclusion, in addition to the work that we do directly with schools and districts and provinces, the DG has actually requested the NECT to mobilize technical, you know, capacity from outside the department to support three important, you know, policy, you know, areas or developments. One is the Early Childhood Development Function Shift. Two is the National Institute for setting up the National Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development. And three is actually rolling out the three-stream curriculum model. So we have started in the second half of this year to work with the department by identifying the required technical expertise that lie outside government to support this important work. And we think that that is very critical. There are a set of special initiatives that the NECT is involved in. One of those that we've been at for the past 3 years is actually the development of new life skills, you know, textbooks with all sorts of, you know, challenges and emotive, you know, aspects and so on. But we have helped the DBE to recruit, well, firstly to raise the resources from the private sector, and secondly, to recruit quite efficiently expertise from outside, you know, government to help the DBE to realize, you know, those textbooks. So we should be done with these textbooks by the end of the year. The DBE is looking at strategies of putting these textbooks out, you know, in the schools. The most important thing is that the DBE will have the copyright of the books, and in fact, can pursue any, you know, efficient and innovative ways of putting them out in the schools. The last strategic initiative is in respect to the sanitation appropriate for education. The presidential project, which was launched in August, so the NCT was given the responsibility to mobilize private sector to support the work of the NCT and the government in the rollout of the trade initiative. We have started that mobilization in the context of quite depressed economic, you know, environment. We have actually recorded over 200 million commitments. Some of that commitment is actually channeled through a direct rollout of the ablution facilities by the private sector. And a proportion of that is coming through the NCT. So just as a matter of fact, this weekend we're launching one ablution facility with the minister and the chairman of ASUPOL in Limpopo, where ASUPOL has actually donated the ablution facility. I must say that we have rolled out about 10, you know, through the support of you know, ASUPOL, with, I think, a very promising technology that is cost-effective, highly, highly cost-effective, and was rolled out within 10 days, you know, per school. So it holds huge potential for, you know, supporting, you know, the work of the NEC team. Chair, in conclusion, in the past, you know, 6 years, we, as the NECT, working with the DBE and the various players in the sector, have actually seen, you know, a lot of value created through the NECT in three ways. One, in supporting and propping up the honourable members are distracting me. Chair, honourable members and the DG are distracting me. So I said in three ways, Chair. One is like contributing to keeping the NDP vision, you know, alive, and which is very important. And I think that we must stick to it until the 2030. The second one, of course, as I've demonstrated, is in supporting service delivery in all sorts of ways, whether it's training teachers or providing materials or developing systems and so on. But the third and very important, you know, way in which we've seen the creation of value is actually how the NCT has contributed towards connecting the various dots and capacities that are in the education space and can support education into a very useful social capital. So how we want to get private sector, civil society, unions, DBE at various levels, various other departments, sister departments of the DBE, to network into capacity that supports the implementation of Chapter 9 of the NDP. Thank you so much, Chair.
What we had intended to achieve. we first talk about the research project that you've just completed before we talk about the current research that we're doing. And the members, we have just completed a research project which was the minister asked us to do back in 2018. This research project was about documenting good practices from the effective schools, which we call schools at work. We identify good performing schools, and we went to these schools to find out what is it they do to achieve good results. And so we use the national certificate and the aspects to identify these schools. But I must hasten to say that although we went to the secondary schools to conduct this research, the findings of this research were applicable to primary schools and they were applicable to our schools as well. Now, the schools that we selected in this study were schools that are in the lower quintile. They have performed well in the last 5 years consecutively without stopping. Schools that were attaining good results in terms of bachelor passes, in terms of extension, in terms of giving us a lot of learners who do well in mathematics and science. So these were critical schools were really competing with schools with good resources in critical school in France. So this study was about the lower critical schools which were between the all in producing good results. And the research was find out what is it that we can learn from this school. And so this slide shows in a summary what we learned from this school. That these are schools that have got good leadership from principals. Where there is ownership of the school in terms of community support that Mr. Court was speaking about. Where there are high expectations for learners and teachers working hard to make sure that they achieve those expectations. The good use of time so that no time is lost for memorial services, for choir practices, for all kinds of things. These schools make sure that if they have 8 hours a day, they use those 8 hours. To make sure that they learn. So if they are learners who need extra hours, they are given those extra hours, not to make up for the lost time, but to give learners more opportunity to learn. High discipline, mutual respect between teachers and learners. So those are the four things that you find on these schools. And so in this study then we found 30 best practices that organized into those 16. And these findings were then shared in this system. Before I talk about the sharing of the findings, let me just alert the honorable members about our business processes, the way we do things. Firstly, we start by collecting data to identify what is happening in this system and then we write reports. And then we don't end with the report writing because we did find over the years that when you write a report and you distribute the schools, it ends up in shares. So part of our business process is to make sure that we share the findings of what we find in the district. We want to talk about the business and how we do that. We want to make sure that those findings lead to specific impact, not just the report that we collected and collected nobody will read. So that forms part of our business process. So for the research project, we will take about 2 years. First part of the year is to collect data, write report, but the next part is to make sure that the report makes sense and is shared correctly with the community system. This tells us about how we then go about sharing the report. The first part of the sharing of the report is to distribute the report to schools. Number one. But the second one, the second bullet, this is becoming more important, is to break the report down into small pieces. Because many principals and teachers get intimidated by this very thick report. And so we break it down into small chunks, which we call policy briefs. This report, for instance, the school network report was broken down into 22 policy briefs. Each brief talks about a specific practice in sufficient detail in a user-friendly language, not in the academic German language. For instance, one of the good practices from these schools was how we were able to bring parents involved in education of their children. How when a school was struggling to get parents to come to the meetings, these schools have succeeded. So in a cooking brief about parental involvement, we'll give more details about how schools have managed to make sure that parents are involved. So those policy briefs are posted on the DPD website, but in addition, we printed copies of those and we distribute to schools. Again, this is another way of making sure that our reports are not just reports that get to be fired away. Secondly, part of sharing the report was also to present the findings to different forums. As we said on the screen, that the South African Principal Association, the National School Government Board Association, the Minister's meeting with the District Directors, TENCOM, CM, and also members of the Political Commission, to make sure that everybody works together to make sure that those findings make sense and we actually use those findings as we sharpen our plan to different layers of the sector. This is the third way of also sharing the reports to make sure that they really are put to good use. We went to all the provinces and conducted provincial workshops. In these workshops, we invited all the principals of underperforming secondary schools as well as principals of underperforming primary schools. Back in 2017, the minister issued a circular which provided criteria for identifying underperforming primary schools. So we used that criteria to identify underperforming primary schools, and the principals of those schools were invited to this particular provincial workshop. These were 8-hour workshops from 8 to 5 in the afternoon. During those workshops, we invited some good performing schools to talk to these principals about what they do in their schools. They like that, or remember, they talk about schools in the lower quintile. So when these principals are listening to their peers, who are also having the same situation in their schools, they're starting to listen to them and say, okay, maybe we can also try this in our own school. And so we brought principals into commissions to talk about how they affected to their schools, they will use these best practices to improve where they feel they are underperforming. So this was a report that was really not just about the report, but I'm making sure that principals of other academic schools look into the issues that they found in those schools and challenging them to send a report into your school, see if you can use any of these good practices. This is one of the sessions in Kampala where the principals attended in big numbers to listen to their peers and to them about how they can do to improve good practices. So the current work that we're doing, and remember now moving to the work that we're doing currently, there are two research projects that we're doing currently. The first one is the one that talks to looking at how the system is using DPE workbooks. The minister asked us to go out in the system to document good practices again in terms of how this good resource is being used in the system, because as you know, the members, we are using a lot of resources to develop this result. Finances to develop digital books. So she said to us, let's look at it and see how they are being used. And this links up the members with the government priority for basic education number one, which talks about improving foundational skills in numeracy and literacy. So we decided to look at the red books in the foundation tree to make sure that we look at how teachers are using these red books to improve foundational skills in numeracy and literacy. And in terms of TEPS, there are three focus areas that teachers must make sure that it covers as they teach. First is phonics and reading, then is writing and handwriting, and then is speech. So our research was looking at how teachers are using digital books to cover all these very important issues and skills. And I'm going to jump off quickly on this and I'll remember because these are amazing findings. We are currently finalizing the report, which will be submitted to the minister, and we hope there will be a launch, I mean, a round discussion table on this in next year. But what we're finding in the schools that work, primary schools that work, in terms of how they are using the digital books to improve reading skills, is that we found five important pillars in terms of how they are using the digital books. One was these schools, they establish clear phonics programs, they've got clear reading programs, they've got reading materials. If they don't have them, they develop their own and they use digital books. DBM workbooks have a lot of stories that teachers are using to teach reading in schools where they don't have much of the graded reader. So they're really using those stories in the workbooks. Plan number four, which is very important, there's monitoring and assessment by the teachers as well by the SMTs to make sure that learners with problems are identified area and are given support. And finally, which is not very common in many schools, but it's found in the school as well, is that they have got catch-up plans for learners who are struggling with reading. So they don't progress to the next grade with those challenges. So quickly, in terms of one of these pillars, if I can start with pillar number one, which is about the phonics program. These schools know exactly what phonics program needs to be followed. For instance, have to specific in some cases in terms of which sounds must be taught, because reading starts with understanding and knowing the sounds. And so these schools have identified the sounds must be taught by the end of the year, by the end of each term, by the end of each week. And they went towards that. This is an example of the phonics program for for grade one. This school knows that there are 38 sounds that must be taught in this grade. And it is spread out which sounds must be taught in which term. And as we go to the web book, the web book gives each other ideas into how they can introduce new sounds. And then pillar number two is about the method of teaching reading. We find in many schools teachers are struggling with teaching reading. And these schools have got a clear method of teaching reading and a school-wide program. So the old foundation teachers in one school have the same method of teaching reading and they use it and they are monitored by the SMT. The comprehension is a big thing in these schools because you find in many schools learners as it were they are backing at the text. They can read but without understanding what they read. So they put more emphasis in these schools in terms of reading and comprehension. I'll talk about that in a second. So these are the five building blocks that lead to reading with meaning that these schools are focusing at. Phonics sound, is vocabulary, is fluency, is comprehension, and the last one is grammar. I saw in the course of implied that we are not doing very well on some. So this was focusing on those critics of the national rate we understand. The third component or pillar is about developing materials for it. These schools know that learners cannot read without materials. And so, like I said, either on the schools that don't have much of the credit readers, they use the e-web books because they've got good stories in those lessons. But they don't have they develop their own materials. And the principal of the schools make sure that they use some of the allocation for the school funding to buy resources for reading. So they emphasize it. And the schools are, like I said, they develop their own material. They ask the schools to develop the reading books that they are reading, they are reading corners, and they use IGRA as a tool to monitor reading. I won't go into details on this one because these are tools that schools have developed to teach reading. Let me just close on this one. This one is what exciting, interesting. A reading card that a school has developed. This school said for all the terms, term 1 up to 4, we develop a reading card based on the phonic sounds that are taught on the particular term. In this school, the sounds that are highlighted or bolded are sounds that are taught in term 3, and so they build words around those sounds. So learners have got to read those words and they are monitoring how many they are reading in a minute. The fourth pillar, which is equally important, is the monitoring and assessment care. Just one thing I'd like to say about this particular one is that these schools, when learners come in at the beginning of the year, number one, they establish a baseline to know how they are reading. Once they have done that, then they decide how they are going to make sure that learners who are behind the catch up and they monitor. The interesting thing about monitoring is that principals as well involved in monitoring. In one school, not one school, but a couple of schools, the principals go to a classroom, ask learners to come to her office and ask them to read. And they realize whether they are reading at the right level. This was very exciting for us to see in some of the schools, honorable members, because these schools start by saying we set targets for different things. One, for identifying sound; two, for recognition of sound; three, for higher frequency words; and four, for comprehension. For all of those things, we establish a baseline. If you look at the first column, for instance, the target for sound recognition is 85 words in sounds in a minute. And so that becomes their baseline. And they then monitor if they are doing well on the target. And then they establish a baseline. In the second column, you'll see that this learner was not doing well in terms of the target. The target is 85 plus 25 words in a minute. And in test number one, to check how he was doing, he got 42, which was above the baseline, but still below the target. So we don't see often how schools are doing this in the coding situation to make sure they have got the target for monitoring in the school level. The last project that we are engaged in is on district network. In the same way that we need to ask us to look at schools and directions, there are districts, some of them in the rural areas, who've got a lot of challenges, but they keep doing very well. She said to us, go to those districts as well and find out what they do to achieve good results so we can share with the district. And also, this is a work in progress. As soon as the report is out, we'll share the report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Well, very much for the presentation from both of you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, to this so important portfolio committee. Maybe for starters, let us say we welcome and appreciate the two presentations as corroborated by both Mr. Kosa and Proxy Tony, respectively. It's true, their presentations marks it very well that they appear to be knowing their stuff, what they're dealing with. Chairperson, it will be an unnecessary oversight if, of course, we do not note and credit amongst them the presence of the Director General, that they are with, and then together with the Institute of Knowledge to assess the Portfolio Committee. The presence of the Department of Education, Department of Basic Education, every time whenever there is any presentation for whatever entity, solidifies the fact that indeed they are committed and serious about the implementation of the education within our country. Chairperson, one and very rare common denominator between two South African former presidents, President Thabo Mbeki and the President Jacob Zuma, was that it is very rare. I don't know whether I was too attentive or what. Every time during the State of the Nation address, they would echo this one sentiment, that education is a societal matter. The emphasis on how we should join hands for purposes of delivering basic education to our children. And my understanding is the two entities as presented today, that they are trying to join queue in as far as that is concerned. But however, I've got some few questions, and there will be one for the NEDU, and there will be possibly two for NECT. Let us directly appreciate the manner in which NECT, Mr. Kosa, you appear to be taking into cognizance how stakeholders can assist us in the delivery of education to our children. You see, the statement that says education is a societal matter simply means there is no single cohort or a single individual who can rise up and say, I'm going to deliver a successful basic education to our children without the support of one another. You see, the danger that often happens is, Chairperson, when a particular entity thinks it can run the show alone, which is very dangerous. You see, in the same way, I think let's appreciate this in any case. The NECT, something which is a little bit running short. I don't know, unless if it was indicated when I took a private walk to the loop, about the need about a need, the role of stakeholders in the provision of our education. But now, to any city, this is my question. How then, realizing that, of course, they are trying to take and bring everybody on board, how then do you, as any city in that airport, assure that your contributions are adhered to, an element of involvement? You see, as the principal of school, I knew that if I did not play ball on 1, 2, 3 things, Ndatemwe and his subjects would be quick to crack the whip for purposes or in the name of, so that I am held for account. But now with all this good work that you are doing, how then do you assure that all these important contributions and the extra mile that you walk is being adhered to? And what do you do in case of the contrary? That's my first question. Number two. Yes. As I said, our expectation is if there is a snake without teeth, then as good as it is not there, if we can't call it there. Sometimes which is very important. Number two. You see, you have made mention of one of your important stakeholders as private sector. And we appreciate that. Now my question is involvement of stakeholders in Tanzania in education does not come cheap. It comes with a price. When you see assistance from whatever quarters, many times it's when people or a particular sector is expecting something at the end. How then do you ascertain that your aims and objectives are not being hijacked for ulterior motives by those who are giving you such assistance? And then the last question which will go to Nidu is that I have not heard you, unless if somebody will assist me hear you speak about how do you run this important race without the stakeholders. Which stakeholders are you? Are you married to? Who are assisting you in the implementation and observance of the aims and objectives of you as an entity? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I firstly want to say thank you for the presentation. It's certainly heartening to know that there is so much work going in to ensure that the education system is improved. So I thank you for that. And secondly, I just want to congratulate Mr. Mahada with his appointment. We are certainly very glad for you. I've got just a question around the capacity building for, in terms of the curriculum. I just want to know the assistance with the curriculum. Is that only in mathematics, sciences, and languages? So it doesn't fall anything outside of that. I understand. And then in terms of the slide, on slide 6, I think this one is for Nedu, it talks about high discipline. How does the findings apply in real time to improve schools with low discipline? And in terms of the textbooks, I've got the same. The textbooks that we currently have, that is the property of South Africa, the intellectual rights around textbooks, and that is owned locally as well. So that is my question. I had another question, but unfortunately it falls outside of the three disciplines, so it is not there. And then there is an acronym that was used in one of the presentations. I think it's FCOP. FOP, sorry. If somebody can just clarify what that means.
Thank you, Justice, and thank you for the coordinated presentation. The vision, from where I'm sitting, I struggle to find where does these two entities fit into the organism. How do we look at it? Much of the work that we look at it, you probably have got principal subject advisors probably doing this. Let me see that they're telling us what they are doing. So I need to clarify on that. What then becomes the role of subject advisors, principal, when we've got this thing to say, apparently the same way. And the kind of training provided to the teachers as well as the subject advisors is a good thing. What kind of training? Because we have trained so many teachers and subject advisors. It's about the methodology to deliver the thing. The program that is developed. What then becomes the role of the teacher? How do you teach principles of this? You make preparation for teachers and they just take this thing and walk into the classroom and start teaching them.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank both of you for the presentation. My first set of questions will be to you and me. Your curriculum differentiation. When you look at that of inclusive education for service schools, you talk about your lesson plan. I would like to know, especially with the new lesson plan that you designed, is it effective to address different learning needs of the school inclusive schools? Of course, you have to consider the time and the curriculum that needs to be finished, because we need to avoid the situation where those who cannot keep up are being left behind. Have you been involved in a curriculum review process for the department? Because you spoke about teachers that are feeling that the work is overburdened. Tell us also important on that, that teachers from their work, from the state of work, than what they actually do teaching does. So have you been involved in curriculum review caps to look at that situation to make it less administrative? Also, your work for both. When I listened to your presentation, it raises a question that somehow some education might come in with other entities. With some of your research work that has been done, if you look at Malusi's research, if you look at all the other departments. So, where do you see yourself in that regard? Do you duplicate what has been done previously? Because you say you're independent, but you need some more like a duplication. Then also your dialogues, I'm glad to see you have a lot of dialogues, but did you have a dialogue on comprehensive sexual education and the content that should be in the textbooks? And also dialogue, you say, with stakeholders, was parents ever involved in your dialogue when you're on the roadshow in different provinces to engage on the CSE curriculum? Because it's been raised on numerous occasions by parents. So I'd like to know if you were actually involved in any of that. Reading. I'm glad we're doing something about reading and that you're being proactive. But in most cases, the workbooks that is part that you've been given, that you say you've designed, you've got a lot of reading material, but kids need to develop themselves even further. And with the access of proper library facilities in school,
what is the teething problem, what many of them as people. What is your view on that? That libraries are actually needed to address the reading situation at school, because most of our public libraries are outdated, and they would look at school then to offer these facilities, which is non-existent. And then to need you, the question that I have there, have you done research on the effectiveness of multi-grade classrooms when it comes to reading, especially in the foundation phase, especially in the rural areas where you see these happen? Thank you.
I'm just having a problem with both stakeholders in terms of their equipment and also their responsibility. Because I find that, like as Margarita said, a lot of education, you are responsible for developing teachers, but ensuring that there's improvement in math, science, and reading and all that. But as we're sitting here, we know that we have performed very well, very badly at the country when it comes to teams. Okay, and also when it comes to the teams as well, I think. Okay.
Most
improved.
Not little, 100. I can give you that.
Oh yeah, and as well as the fact that our great foreigners had a problem of understanding, you know, their reading. It's not that, you know, you just come in and you're going to try to improve. You've been existing for a while, and this is where we are. Despite the fact that, you know, you have, you know, you are responsible for ensuring that, you know, our education. So for me, I don't feel like we're not getting very far money on the side in terms of those issues. Because, you know, let me prove it. I also think that you see, like, you know, you say that you went to grade one, and original one, to go to grade three schools to go and see how it is that, you know, they are, you know, those that are performing well and see what is that they're doing differently from other schools. That is good as well. We said that the minister asked you that. But I would really like to, really, for us to try to get to the standard of quintile four and quintile five as our schools. I mean, we deserve to have good quality education. So if we need to go and get good practices, we have to look at those schools, the quintile four and quintile five schools, and see what it is that they are doing, and also look at their budgets, because the budgets that the schools are getting, our budgets haven't been haven't improved within the schools. So clearly the issue of budgeting also plays a crucial role, because the other thing that you're talking about, you know, the subject and everything, but you don't look at the social issues. We have a very high increased rate of violence in our schools, especially for example, quintile one, quintile two, quintile three schools. And that is primarily because that our learners, they don't have any sports facilities, they are not involved in any social aspect of the school to ensure that they improve their citizenry with good citizens, and also, you know, to improve on their character. Those are the issues that we're looking at. I would like to see that, you know, we're looking at that, because you're responsible for what I understand is that you will just go and check the schools, look at the schools, how they're performing, and advise the minister of what is it that needs to be done. And that's what I would agree that. I know I appreciate this presentation, but I would really like to see more of that, of, you know, what is it that you've seen, and especially as I'm thinking of quintile four and quintile five, those should be our standards. Those should be a standard that you're trying to achieve. We cannot be going racing for the bottom. Because if we're looking at quintile one and quintile two, quintile three, it's a race to the bottom. It's not saying how to improve our education to go to the standard of quintile four and five. That, like, you know, as a parent, I don't see the value of going to quintile four and five schools, because quintile one, two, and three will be just as good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I did have some notes I made, but I'll guys. First of all, we'd like to say that on both presentations, and I did see Nita spoke about something in 2018, can we just get clarity on exactly period both presentations were? I'm not quite sure. It would make it difficult to work out your own research. And it's very broad. I think what we would also like to have is a much more provincial specific data. I'll tell you why. In ECT you refer to six provinces on slide 10. And you talk about 6,000 stakeholders. I mean, the first question comes up, is it in Gauteng and the Western Cape, because it's quite easy to get there, it doesn't cover Eastern Cape, Rapopo, Northwest Cape, etc. So I think in future it would also help us to be a lot more provincial specific. It makes more sense. And then obviously something that concerns me is, like other colleagues have said, Jeff, is that I think at some point we must have proper research or a proper document of who of all the department entities and the department section, who works on ECD and what is everybody's function, who works on ablution facilities, what's everybody's role, because we actually, that's why it sounds to duplication for us, because now everybody is on everything. You can't do that. You cannot be a chief of everything. There must be clear guidelines, who does what. Some does talking, some does implementation. I don't know. It gets very confused. The other thing is, I'm also very interested to hear about ownership of schools. How are you getting communities involved to take ownership? I'll give you an example, Jerry. Many years ago, when Carter Osmore was still around, we built the school, Sebourne Primary. It was a stunning principal. We built that school with Coca-Cola, fat marine containers, eventually the department, etc., in the program. And the community was involved because they used the facility, there were photocopiers, there were lots of things happening, and they took ownership because they were somehow involved and had, well, they used the facility, and that made you sort of ownership. How else do we really, really get communities to take ownership of these schools? I'm very curious about that. And then, Chairperson, there was an issue about the sanitation, the electric 10 days per school. Can you tell us what system this is and where did we get it from? For that, I will leave it now with a very slight tongue in the cheek but serious matter, and I hope we don't have the same graphics in these lower grade books that we had in the lockdown. Sexual education. The graphics were terrible.
Compare income and also the cooperative. For example, awards are one of the things that are encouraging teachers and also the students in those different schools to perform very well. But one of the mistakes that is normally happening when the awards are being awarded is that the comparison for the schools that are better off and the schools that are worse off. For example, taking the Star College in Westfield in Devon and taking Ozark in Umlazi. Those are two different. One, the areas are different in terms of the Star College would be much better off as a private college. Of course, when it comes to passing, it will have 100% pass rate. And when you go to Okay, you'll find that it's 98% or it's 60%. But we don't compare in terms of the number of students that is enrolled in the Star College and the number of students in the class of Kuzak. You find Kuzak has 980 students and Star College has 40 children. That's why we have attained the 100% pass mark. And then we compare them when we do the award or any other recognition that we do. So to me, I just want to check and also to recommend that when pairing the school, taking the best practice issues, you will definitely compare the schools that are almost similar. Because you can't tell me if you are the same that you can do better and I can't. Why then I can't do better? So those are the issues that I would love if maybe the department can also, especially me, because I recognize that it's one of the few areas, that the comparison must be compared equals with equals, not pairs with oranges, because that is not the same thing. And also the issue of provision of the facilities, for example, the sporting facilities, all the sporting facilities is one of the areas. The partnering, it needs to be looked at, especially at this level, maybe to recommend to the provinces that we have the local government and in terms of the local government and the province and the national, we should have the cooperative government. Cooperate in terms of the provision of the facilities where we cannot provide. They must provide admission facilities, they must provide equipment for the children to be able to relax and play. Because we know that playing children can be much brighter than the child.
Thanks, Madala. So I must also join the members in returning to the issues and also just mention that I think we have expressed our knowledge. But then, I'll start with NCT. On the dialogue that I see the stakeholders, in particular the dialogue on school spaces, the stakeholders that are participating, the unions, the GPs, the staff, the department. I'm just interested in how were the discussions and what conclusions probably or how are the stakeholders seeing the solution to the school space issue. Regardless of the additional details as the committee. And of course, you know, we had it with the police, and I think we came to a conclusion that it's a societal issue. We want to get to know kids from those communities and what they learn, the examine from those communities which they take to school. But I'm just interested in it. And I'm mentioning that. And then on the presentation on slide 8, there is a reference that is made to knowledge, to skills, to character, and meta learning. But the concern that I'm missing is that you left value, which in my view is the cornerstone of the education system. Now, how do you plan to train initial future education? And then slide 3, I just want, if it's possible, when you're done with the text that you refer to for grade 4 to 7 on new life skills, can you request to have a sample copy as a portfolio committee so that we can ourselves as members of the committee? And then I'm also interested in how do you run your institution, and do you have staffing, and the staffing that you are having is permanently employed, and where are your offices? And if you do get sponsorship, how is that regulated by the department? And who's auditing also your financial financial as the organization? And then on me, the questions that I'm having is on slide 8 of the presentation. You mentioned that there is a collection of data and sharing of research findings and ensuring that research findings impact of school practices. May you explain to the committee what research methodology you are using? And on the inclusive education approach, in terms of documenting school practices, did you take into account the inclusive approach where you are able to include the lower quintile schools as well as special schools in the report? And then the same interest that I'm having in need is your staffing, how is your staffing, and do you have people that are permanently employed, and what is it? The way that you've done, I don't know, probably you correct me, but my observation is that you are concentrating more on schools that are doing good rather than schools that are not really doing good in our society. Can you just explain to us how are you able to how are you functioning without the complete need to act, or is it there? Can you probably just explain to us as the committee? And then I think basically those are my questions. And then I don't know now the approach, whether we hand it to the OTG or probably they will respond first and then we'll come. But anyway, can we allow the response?
I'll try and quickly go over and then allow the two colleagues to then address the specific question. Thank you, honorable member. Chair, let me start with maybe a few things that colleagues will fill me in. Starting with questions that were directed at me from the honorable chair, we focus focused on quintile 1 to 3 schools to just demonstrate the fact that for a school to perform, you don't have to be a quintile 4 and 5. And therefore, quintile 4 and 5 cannot be the standard of any school, including themselves, by the way. And the team study will tell you that our quintile 4 and 5 were performing far below schools of the same level in other countries. And therefore, you can't even use quintile 4 and 5 and say they are any standard in any way. They themselves need to go up. And therefore, we're looking at the so-called poor schools. What makes a poor school to perform? And there are basic things that make a poor school to perform. And those schools, many of us around this table come from. Multi-grade, poor, you've got nothing, but you produce results. You've got basic things in place. And one of those things is what you refer to, Chair. Values and attitude. Any education that doesn't have values and attitude is bound to struggle. The definition of education, by the way, is impartation of knowledge, skills, values, and attitude. That's what education is about anywhere, in any textbook. So I'm just saying we're looking at quintile 1 to 3. Surprisingly, Chair, surprisingly, is that even the these schools that Dr. Stone and the team looked for, many of them were performing better than quintile 4 and 5. It is not resources. Resources are important to just level the play field. That's very crucial. But resources do not do the work. Resources do not teach. And surprisingly, honorable member, is that you could find schools that are performing in all provinces except for Western Cape. And I challenge you to go and look at that data. Quintile 1 to 3. And the minister has put this to the MEC, I've written to the HOD of the Western Cape to say, you need to look at this. Because for you to turn the situation around, how will we determine whether you're making any change? We are going to check from the poorest. If you're able to change the fortunes of the poorest for the better, then you are turning the course. And we're doing this in all 9 provinces. And the focus on quintile 1 to 3 schools, not quintile 4 and 5. So I just wanted to make that point. So it's also about, you know, you're picking up best practice. And that's why we're looking at schools that are performing. So that when you go to schools that are dysfunctional and underperforming, the diagnostic report from the National Planning Commission said at that time, before 1910, 80% of our schools were dysfunctional. And that's the bit that Dr. Rantel, I think, likes quoting, which was before 1910. I mean, 2010. So, we're looking at schools that are performing without the resources that we think about. But essentially, we are looking at best practice. So that when you go to a dysfunctional school, you say, the school next door, in the same locality, in the same ward, is performing better than you. What is your problem? In some cases, you find that the school has got a brand new building, but it doesn't perform. A school with an old building, you know, teachers that know what they are doing, the principal who's got a sense of direction, they are performing. There are schools that have the best facilities ever. And those are the things that you are looking for. So I'll leave it at that. The rest, I think, Dr. Stolle and the CEO will respond to. So, Honorable Chabalala, and I want to thank you, all of you, except for one member that I'm not going to mention. You appreciated the 2 presentations and appreciated the work that you are doing.
I'm
not sure whether it's guilty conscience.
No.
Okay.
Oh my God. I'm under
No. I'm addressing what Mr. Olala raised. The notion of comparing apples with apples, that's a very important statement. We are very cautious of that so that you take the context into account. The village as opposed to the suburb is a context. You can't compare. When you compare the two, you must take the context into account. And then credit schools that are located in a depressing context. And then determine whether those that are in a favorable context are able to use that to their advantage. That is crucial. I fully agree with you. And we're looking at that, and that's why what Dr. Stoller was looking at was quintile 1 to quintile 3. That's what we're looking at. And we know how this poverty ranking has been done. It's in line with the poverty ranking done in the municipal ward, which used a unique index, which placed all of these institutions on an equal plane. So that's my comment on that. And then Honorable Van der Waal, I agree that Million of Time will do better. We'll make sure that the data is provincially segregated. Yeah, but I know that you don't want to share your provincial identity, although you are members of the National Assembly, not NPOP.
And taking into context the social circumstance of the Western Cape and Tikama.
So, to be specific, to provide provincial specific data is extremely useful in terms of the oversight work that you do. So we'll take that into account. There's no battle around that. We just need to comply to it. Honorable Machira, I think I've addressed the notion of quintile 4 and 5. And I humbly invite you to go and read the Tim's report. And it will tell you about how our quintile 4 and 5 perform compared to other quintiles. And it's for that reason that I'm saying you can't even use them for a standard. And I must caution with respect, the greatest respect, Chair, that it might, I know that the intention is not that, but this might create a wrong impression that if you are poor, there's very little or nothing that you can learn from you. And I don't think it's like that. But it also creates another impression to say, because the statement said violence happens in quintile 1, 2, 3 schools. No, it's not because they are quintile 1, 3 schools. The social science says schools that are located in violence-ridden areas are bound to be affected by that, because the school is a microcosm of civil society. What happens in a community spills over into a school. Schools are social institutions. You don't experience violence because they are quintile 1, 2, and 3. It's because of where they are located. It's their geographic location. So I'm pleading, because the wrong impression might be that if you are poor, you are violent. And that's really not, I'm making a humble submission, Chair, to you. And I'm not saying that the honorable member is not entitled to that view. I'm just saying it might carry a wrong impression, that if you are poor, you are violent. And that's not the case. There are many values that we can learn from poor people. In fact, poor people are the most humblest creatures that you can find. People who express values that you can learn from. Let me leave it there. I don't want to be a sociologist and psychologist.
Give that to me.
Honorable King. Oh, before I go there. Now, honorable member, like you have given me and the colleagues an early Christmas, I wish I could do that. There is something that's going to surprise you and surprise the whole country. And I'm going to leave it that, especially with the Peel study which was done in 2015. Mm-hmm. There is something that's going to shock you. And it's coming. And remember that the the other field study was done this year. Done this year. And I'm just going to keep that under wraps. But also to say that, remember that we're presenting to you regularly in terms of our performance as well. Of all the national and international studies that we presented above, there's only one where we did not go up, and it's only in grade 4, which is skills. Grade 5, we even went up. So when you criticize, we accept criticism. But I'm really pleading that we must stay as close as possible to the fact. So the performance of the system is not improving, it's not entirely true, but I leave it for the shock that either you get before Christmas or you'll get early next year. We still, the result of 2015 will come back to you. Honorable King, yeah, I'm sure the bulk of your questions will be answered by the CEO. But what I can say is that we do communicate our curriculum with you and we bring them on board and so on. But let me also address the issue of duplication. I would make the same observation if I were in your position, because you are not in the department, you don't coordinate the line functions. The duplications are not necessarily, they might be perceived, they are not necessarily real. But let me make this point. NIDU, for instance, NIDU, part of some of the functions that used to be the delivery and oversight unit, those functions are performed by NIDU. And it's going to take me long to really explain how the delivery and oversight unit was conceived. We also learned that from Britain, from the Prime Minister was operating at the time in Britain, who established something similar to that, and then we established that in the department. Now, the role of a delivery and oversight unit is to look for blockages in the system, identify those blockages, unblock them, and then hand over the function to the real owners of the function, and then they perform. We've shown you how to fix the problem. Don't break it again. Run with it properly and then they operate. That's part of what NIDU is doing. They do research independent of line functions and tell us what is wrong. And then come to us and say, for you to fix this, you have to do 1, 2, 3. We're now handing over these responsibilities to those who are supposed to run it properly. That's what they do. Now, The NEPT is created as an agile entity, which is free from the bureaucracy of taking 3 to 6 months of running tenders and all of those things, where you have a CEO who can take decisions on the spot and do things quicker than we would do in the bureaucracy. And that's the difference between the two. And the reason why they are involved in some of the functions that we should be doing is because we are not performing as we should be performing, as some of you might have observed, right? And the intention is to come in and breathe in life and get us to run quicker and better and see things different from the way we see them in the system. Because when you are in the system, you only see what you are. And the nature of the bureaucracy is that you focus on your line function. When you are outside the system, you just run over, you are not constrained by the way the bureaucracy operates in line functions, work clapper and all of those things. They are able to run over those things and show you how to do things better and different. And the other thing is that they have the confidence of the private sector, because they are not necessarily part of it. The private sector will trust them better than we do. Communities tend to work better with them than working with our officials, because they are not part of us. And that's the value that you get from an entity like the NEPT. So some of the things might appear to be the same, but they are really intended to strengthen, to compensate, to enhance what exists in them. I hope I have tried. I know that I might not succeed to convince you, but I have really tried to. But this view of duplication has been expressed, of course, even in the past by other members who are not even here, who used to be here. So it's an observation that we welcome, which will remind us that we should make sure that we reduce or perceived or real eliminate the duplication. So, Honorable Suela, more or less I have addressed that. Now, the way NIDU is located in the organogram of the department, there is a dotted line to the head of the department and a solid line from the head of NIDU to the minister. It is there in the organogram of the department. The NECT is an entity outside, like Umalusi, like SAIS. You don't find them in our organogram, but they relate with us through line functions. For instance, NECT works through a line function of branch T, where partnerships and other responsibilities are located. SAIS, for instance, relates with us with the branch T, also in terms of exams, in terms of curriculum with branch C, the curriculum branch. But you won't see it in our curriculum. So I'm trying to explain the conundrum of saying, I don't see where you are located in the functions of the department. So that's how they operate. They operate outside as entities, but there are specific line functions that link up with them. And Honorable Super, and I hope this is the last one. I think Dr. Shuole will explain the notion of how does it contribute to discipline. Schools that work, one cardinal attribute that they get right is discipline. And one of those that contributes to us that teaching begins 7 minutes of the period, you know, and learners take charge of the situation. There's leadership from learners, and you won't have discipline issues. A functional school, a performing school, you really don't have discipline issues. Are usually associated where things are not happening when they should be happening. So I think we'll share more about that. And the last one is Honorable Murate Ta. He's out now. Well, his were mainly comments, maybe I must leave it at that. But also to say that just from the department, if the NECT works with officials and they are not doing what they are expected to do, the authority of line functions is not suspended. And the NECT works with line functions. In provinces, it works with SGs down up to even district level. The authority is in place. If people do not draw the line, the NECT simply communicates and works with all of us within the value chain and gets things done as they are expected to be done. So then I'll hand over to the two committees.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue has covered most of the issues that are raised by honorable members. I just took on those things that he had not to mention. The first question was about the role of the stakeholders. How was it used to conduct a research project, and do we identify what we find as lacking or not lacking in the system? In terms of the thing with the stakeholders, then what we do is to present what we find to the relevant stakeholders. For instance, in the school network, the relevant stakeholders will be put in part themselves to say, what can you learn from the teacher? Secondly, what is the other hand school association to say, talk to your members just what you could do to make sure that the practices that you find from the school network can be replicated by your members in their school. Thirdly, the relevant stakeholder is to receive that message of also the National Association of School Governing Bodies. Because some of the findings talk to how the school governing bodies are supporting schools innovation to, for instance, after GSM, RFI involvement and all of that. So we give this presentation to those. So the stakeholders that we talk about are the stakeholders that are relevant to the research project that we do. If you do a research project right now that is about the use of the workbook and it's focusing on the foundation phase, so our stakeholders there will be kind of participating advisors, it will be teachers in the foundation phase, it will be department head of foundation phase. So it depends on the research project and identify the members and the stakeholders which will initially attend to the research. Then you have to talk about the discipline, because one of the things that the school, the research school took up about was discipline across the board. Discipline for teachers, discipline for learners, discipline for even parents. Because one school they say, well, what is accountable for discipline? If you bring your child late at school, you're not a discipline parent. If you don't go to your classes, have on task, it's a problem. So in one school, for instance, not one school, there's a couple of schools that common practice now. Then the class captain keeps a record to indicate what time the teacher came to the class. And we keep this record because when the result of the issue, the teachers are sitting to the account and say, you come late to your class recording. Here's a record from the captain. So it's about everybody being held accountable to make sure that there's discipline. The next one was the question whether we did the research about multi-phase schooling. No, we haven't done any research on that. And then there was a question about research methodology from the honorable chair. Our research methodology is to make sure that we're inclusive. So when we do a FEMRA, we include special schools, ordinary public schools, different degree types. So we must in all the provinces, we want to make sure that our framework is representative of the system. Starting also from the chair, we have a staff which is on contract that are responsible for collecting data, the researchers collecting data and analyzing data. All of that is done in-house. We collect data, we analyze data, and we write report. So we have quarter staff, thanks to the DG who provides the compensation for that staff who are working for media. Then there was a question about reading. Yes, reading is not, we're not doing very well as a country, but what we're doing in terms of this particular study we're doing now is again documenting good practices. Because in spite of the fact that we're not doing well as a country, but there are pockets of excellence. What can we gain from this group that we're doing well in terms of reading? The libraries, yes, some middle schools don't have libraries, that's just true. We do find that some schools have got a reading corner, and the principals make sure that part of the budget goes for buying those. So if the principal is serious about reading, they make sure that the school budget, some of the school budget goes for British readers and clothes. So those are the things that we find in good schools. And I think the other stuff, well, the teacher did mention that we're working within the Department of Basic Education, but independently, so we don't have an act that is regulating us, as the chair was asking. I think everything else has been responded to by the teacher. I'm not sure if I'm making any. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, in the same vein, I'm going to pick up on the aspect that I think the DG has left out. But they have to say that in this country, and quite unique to our country, is a long history of multi-stakeholder approach to development. And it's something that we should not take light, nor miss the opportunity to optimally utilize. Whether it's in the delivery of democracy that we have, or addressing some really, really contentious issues. In our nation, we actually have that as part of our vehicle. Secondly, there's a long history of private sector working in the education space, and part of the challenges that we've had in that regard is lack of coordination or them doing things that are not in line with what government is trying to do. So the role of the NEPC in that space is to try and coordinate the private sector support of the initiatives that are driven by government. And we've seen a lot of appreciation from the private sector companies. Of course, those that have interest in improving education and not just marketing their companies. To have an agency that helps them to coordinate their contributions better. So, Honorable Rosetta, when you work with various stakeholders with different backgrounds, you're definitely going to have tensions. So I chose not to spend time talking about the tension. But ideally, if you put a business person across the table from the teacher union side, there's tension. There's tension between private sector and government. But it has been better to have these people in one room to clear out this tension. And in fact, the perception gaps are being minimized as we move ahead. But it's something that you manage on an ongoing basis. You bring people, you engage people. They have issues, you go and clarify until you find, you know, each other. In fact, if you went through the NDP, there's a number of instances where the NDP talks about common mindset. And common mindset have to be worked on an ongoing basis. Whether the private sector, you know, comes in with, you know, expectations, of course, there are those that come in with expectations. We have noted those. And in fact, we deal with them. Our starting point is that when you give, philanthropy is about giving without expectations. So whatever you give, there's no expectations mixed in. And in most cases, we don't deal with the main, you know, companies, but we deal with their foundations. And their foundations are about taking after profits that are allocated to social development. And we actually channel those into the work that we do. Lots of lessons that we learn. But when the NECC started, we took the 30-year history of stakeholder involvement, including private sector. We said, where was it weak? How do we strengthen it? And so on and so forth. One of the things is, if you have clear, well-researched, monitored progress, it helps to focus the various stakeholders on the key levels. But if these things are in the air, one comes with computers, you don't need computers in that school. One comes with that, and so on and so forth. I can tell you, I think we've done much better than we've done in the first, you know, 15, 20 years of democracy because of the structure that we established. Not that there are no challenges, but we deal with those challenges on an ongoing basis. The life skills textbook, I mean, I would agree with the portfolio committee, you know, more. I think Dr. Watson and Dr. Witt, who are overseeing that initiative, should at the right moment bring those textbooks in. All we're doing as the NECC is to create a platform for us to quickly go and identify someone who specializes in this, that, contract them, make those resources available to Dr. Wilson, Dr. Watson, for the development work to happen. So it's a facilitation work that we do. When there's money there, you know, employees, and so on and so forth. So the content artists must indeed come to the
pictures.
Including the pictures, the content in the pictures.
Some content with that.
And the meaning. Yes.
We've got them.
The
writing is fine, but
the picture is I hope I'm protected even on my way back to Victoria. So fundamentals of performance is actually sense of FOP stands for fundamentals of performance. And it's just a concept that we're using for all those key 10 key areas that districts have to be doing work on. And the key message is that districts have to be assessing themselves across all those areas without turning a blind eye on any of them. What also happens when we've seen a pattern of areas that districts are stronger in and areas that districts across the country are weaker on. The training that we provide, Honorable Tuwela, obviously includes, in the main, it's teach and curriculum management. And curriculum management is a joint responsibility of teachers, HODs, principals, circuit managers, district officials. We have a curriculum in this country. We all have to have a common understanding and view and approach on how we manage its delivery on a day-to-day basis. Of course, if you're going to deliver, if you're going to manage the curriculum delivery well, you need to focus on aspects of content and methodology, which we do in addition to. Right? So, moving along, Honorable King about the curriculum differentiation is a difficult area. Majority of our schools will be non-inclusive schools and non-small schools and multi-grade schools. So the design of the materials that we use in the main are for your mainstream schools, normal schools. And the messaging that we give to these teachers who are in inclusive schools and multi-grade schools is that that actually must just serve as a best benchmark. Then as professionals, in very unique and difficult circumstances, we'll have to see on how to adjust that. I must admit that is still, you know, a challenge that we are, you know, facing in that respect. Curriculum review, this work is done in collaboration with subject advisors. So representation of subject advisors across the provinces and the national level are involved in this work. It's their work that's facilitated through the NECC, and every point of the development, these are reviewed, feedback is made, changes are made on the basis of that. Dialogue on sexuality policy, not yet. In fact, Dr. Whittle was asking me about yesterday whether we could help organize the dialogue with that, and I think we can very well do that. I think Honorable Machete, you have responded to that in the I would agree more with about provincial data. So by the way, and you refer to dialogue, today our team is in Togo running an EPD dialogue. So it should have been there. It has happened in the other provinces. So it is happening, and we will provide that kind of data. The sanitation, so who's doing it? All the people who approached us when the president said, go and facilitate this thing. We had a list of them, we briefed all of them, they showed us their technology, and then first, we said, go to the CSIR and the Department of Water Affairs and make sure that your technologies are set for compatibility there. Some have already been, others not. So those that are not compatible, we haven't considered. And then we went into issues of pricing and so on. And the over 20 schools that we've covered. The first was covered by Pick and Pay. So Pick and Pay directly with the provider. The second was covered by ASOPO. So, and in all the cases where we engage these people, the owner of the money and the DBE as the recipient are involved in the decision making, in the design of this process. It is transparent, it's on the table, and we look for efficiency and effectiveness. And tell you.
And maintenance.
And maintenance. So you will be very happy to know that today in my office there are about 6 PhD students who are presenting their initial report on sociological assessment of the utilization of toilets with various technologies. Because we want to see whether how the communities use these, their maintenance, whether they are smelly, whether they like them or not, and so on. Most of the assessments that we've had before are from an engineering point of view. And so it makes sense to contribute to a future strategy by looking at the sociological aspects. So, Honorable Chabalala, the work on school safety, this is the second round we had this summit. The first round, we allowed everybody who is impacted by the issue, whether it's SAPS or teacher unions or principals association and so on, to say to what extent this is impacting them and what have they been doing as various organizations alongside the department in collaboration with the department. There were agreements on what we're going to do together. And in fact, we as the NECC continue to support a secretariat that brings this stakeholders on an ongoing basis. You know, to see to it that they continue to work together to address the issues. In spite of its complexity and its linkages to all sorts of socio-structural issues from society. Values, it's conceived in that framework as part of the character basis. And I must say that using that framework to assess our curriculum, we have covered a lot of the 21st century competence as South Africa. You know, well in advance of the 21st century teaching discourse. So issues about staffing, we have about 25 people at head office, and I must say 60% of those are postgraduate young people that we're exposing from different fields, legal, HR and whatever, who would try and teach, and we think that they would stay in the system. In the provinces where we do work, we have 6-10 contractors who we engage as and when we have work, and that number has oscillated between 70 and about 150, depending on which projects are running. We're looking at actually increasing the number of youth involved in the reading space. So we're talking to a number of possible funders. First Rand is providing, you know, funding for the youth to engage the youth. We're talking to the East City Center. We're talking the skills, to the skills funding, you know, outfit in the DHET to see if we can get more youth involved in reading, for instance. So, and that will kind of increase the number of people who post that are on the ground. In terms of governance, we have a board that represents government, private sector, teacher unions, and civil society. We religiously meet with our board every quarter. We have an annual report, which I brought copies here, and those will be shared with yourself. But otherwise, all our annual reports are on the website. We are audited by Ernst & Young, and every year, the board will receive proposals from a number of auditing companies. We choose one who audits us and we present you know, the results, you know, in that respect. So, you know, I think that's about it, and that should have covered all the questions, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Eugene. Thank you very much,